Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to be joined by Jacob Milham, who covers the Kansas City Royals with Kings of Coffin. We'll get his thoughts on the three-game series between the Royals and the White Sox and what they need to do to win this weekend series against the Tigers. We've been talking some college football. We'll get back to it in the 3 o'clock hour as well. Nebraska is coming into town. It is believed that Nebraska is going to have 65,000 fans make the trip down from Lincoln to Kansas City. They are expecting a sellout today at Arrowhead Stadium for that game. Speaking of Arrowhead, let's talk about the Chiefs for just a bit. So there is a story right now on ESPN where they are giving an X factor for all 32 teams in the National Football League. Now, I'll tell you who they have as the X factor for the Chiefs. But first, I'll offer up one for you guys on both the offensive and defensive side. Rob, we'll get your suggestion as well. On offense, to me, the answer seems very, very simple. It's Hollywood Brown. I do not know what Hollywood Brown looks like really in this offense yet. Last season, when we got a chance to see him, it was so late in the year that I don't know if we really got an accurate depiction of what that looks like. In the playoffs, I don't think he was himself, which makes sense. You basically missed the entire year last year. So I don't think that we really got a sort of feel and taste for what it was like to have him. I mean, Hollywood Brown got thrown the ball. If you add the postseason, if you add the regular season, he got 28 targets last year. That's a minuscule amount. In the postseason, he only got 13 targets. In the postseason, Hollywood Brown was 5 catches for 50 yards in the postseason and didn't score a touchdown. So I don't really know what to expect from Hollywood. Is he going to be the guy that they got at the end of the regular season? So in those two regular season games against Pittsburgh, he had 4 catches for 46 yards. Against Houston, he had 5 catches for 45 yards. You can obviously live with that kind of production. And if you get that guy on a game in, game out basis, a player that's going to give you somewhere between, let's say, 40 and 60 yards a game. And then when you get Rashee Rice back and then you got Xavier Worthy and you have all the other options that we're talking about with Kansas City, that's a really good third option, a really good swing flex option to talk a little fancy football here. So I like Hollywood Brown as their X factor. I can't really think of who on offense you could consider it to be. Maybe you would say Breshard Smith, just kind of in that Jerick McKinnon role and that Samaje Perine role. Maybe he's more heavily involved in pass catching than we are anticipating at this point in the season. But on offense, I can't really think of too many people that should get the X factor designation over Hollywood Brown.
Let me ask you a question. Does the X factor have to be a skill position player? Because if it can just be any player on offense, in the answer, Joshua Simmons? Like, if you're saying it has to be a skill position player, then I'm cool saying Joshua Simmons doesn't count, doesn't play a skill position, all that. But I feel like the obvious X factor is Joshua Simmons. I know he looked good in the preseason, but Kingsley Suamataia last preseason looked solid at left tackle, and then 6 quarters of football later, his left tackle career was over. Like, if the Chiefs feel like they got the steal of the draft at 30 whatever they trade up to get him, doesn't that mean that Joshua Simmons is the X factor? Because if they have their Willie Rofe, if they have their Orlando Brown, if they have their Eric Fisher, just naming 3 different levels of franchise type left tackle, then the Chiefs offense should be back to explosive. But we don't know until it's live bullets time, he's coming off an injury, all the stuff. If it's only skill position players, it doesn't count. But if not, if it's everyone on the offense, in the answer, Joshua Simmons, he's just such an unknown.
Yeah, I mean, I probably would say Kingsley maybe more, but I think we're kind of going at it from the exact same logic. I would say that Kingsley is just much more of an X factor just because of what happened last year. Like, we were looking at Kingsley as a day one starter. It turned out to me by day 3, he was not a starter. And then obviously the Chiefs made a move and they were adjusting from, I mean, basically the entire season, they were adjusting to being so wrong on Kingsley Suamataia. That's what led them to have to move Joe Tooney over. That's what led them to bring in DJ Humphreys. Every decision that they made at offensive line really stemmed from Kingsley not being who they thought he was and Wanye also not being who they thought he was. So I think you and I have the same logic, just looking at it a little bit differently through the eyes of 2 different players. Who do you feel like that player is on defense? Because ESPN, they have the X factor as Jaden Hicks. They have Jaden Hicks as one of those kind of players that could be an X factor for the defense. I like that. I would actually probably go Charles Omenihu. The Chiefs have never started the year with healthy and available Charles Omenihu. Remember, in the first year he got here, he was still dealing with the off-the-field issue from what happened when he was playing for San Francisco. So he had a suspension to kick off the beginning of the season. This past year, he was then recovering from the ACL tear and the leg injury. This is the first season, now heading into year three. There has been no injury concerns with Charles Omenihu and no off-the-field drama, mess, whatever words you want to use to describe it. So to me, that's the X factor. There was a different version of George Karloftis when you had Charles Omenihu. So if we are talking about off the rip, off the jump, your pass rushes, Dana, and Ashton Gelati and Omenihu and Chris Jones and Karloftis, I think you feel pretty equipped. You certainly have a good enough. It's not the best pass rush in the league or anything, but you definitely can be viable. You can certainly get after the other team's quarterback if you currently, and I think it's very safe to say, the Chiefs have three proven pass rushers if they're all going to be healthy, and Omenihu, Karloftis, and Chris Jones. So I'm going to say on offense, for me, it's Hollywood Brown. On defense, I'm going with Charles Omenihu. Those are my X factors heading into the year.
God, Charles Omenihu is a really good answer. I think, I mean this as a positive door to the Chiefs. Is there an answer outside of Hicks or Omenihu? Like, I was sitting here thinking, like, maybe Christian Fulton. Like, maybe. But Christian Fulton feels like a little bit of a known commodity in the NFL. But if he is better than Jalen Watson, now you can be flexible with McDuffie. You can play him inside. You can play him outside. Like, their cornerback room gets deeper. But, you know, he only played in the one preseason game. He was battling injuries at camp. You know, but he's a known player in the NFL. Is the answer maybe Leo Chenault, but we kind of know what he is. Like, the defense, in the nicest way possible, does not have X factors outside of Jaden Hicks and Charles Omenihu. And I would even argue those guys are a little bit of known commodities. Jaden Hicks played a lot of snaps last year in the NFL. We know what he is. He's just replacing a starter. And Charles Omenihu, when healthy and on the field, we know what he is. Like, the defense is kind of without question, without X factor, unless you get, like, deep into the depth chart, and you're saying, like, oh, how much can Ashton Gelati help us? Maybe he's the X factor. But if you're saying defensive end number three is your X factor, you're in a really good position as an NFL team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm looking at this defense, and it's funny. I did a couple of interviews yesterday about Rashee Rice, about the feeling around the Chiefs. You know, you kind of get always asked that question. Well, who's new? Well, there's a lot new on offense. I mean, there's a lot to talk about when we're coming to the offense. There's really not that much new when talking about the Chiefs defense. Like, this is a unit that I expect to be very good from the very beginning of the season and only improving. They're not really having to implement a lot of new pieces, and they're not really dealing with a lot of injuries on that side of the ball either. The offense is dealing with injuries. They're dealing with certain things. You're dealing with your number one wide receiver who isn't going to be 6 weeks of the season. That's not what we're talking about with the defense. So I got a lot of hope. I got a lot of expectations for this defense. I wanted to share this with you. ESPN, they are doing an NFL, an X factor for every team in the National Football League. The X factor that they have for the Kansas City Chiefs, it was Jaden Hicks. Coming up in a bit, we're going to get to the Royals. Before we do that, I just want to play this audio for you because, of course, Mad Dog Russo, he mad.
And I did an NFL breaking news. What? What happened? Parsons got signed? No, it wasn't that. And then today, I got to sit back and listen to Stevie wax poetic on the Lady Di Charles relationship. Can we calm down on Travis Kelce and freaking Taylor Swift? It's football season. I don't want to see him bow down, marry me, Taylor. I could care less. Let's play football. I'm not interested. Now they got to watch 9 million camera shots in that week one game when they play in Sao Paulo and Roger Goodell in the freaking, oh my God, enough, 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 enough. It's football time. I want Kelce to drop 5,000 passes because I'm taking the Chiefs as an under at 11.5. I ain't moved from at all. This is not Lady Di, and this is not freaking Charles in 1980. I am so sick and tired of seeing it. Hey, have a happy life. Thousands of kids love each other forever, but keep it away from my TV.
That was Christopher Mad Dog Russo talking about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. I imagine a lot of you also feel that way about the Travis and Taylor. They don't bother me. They're not. They're just. I would say for as public as their relationship is, they have done, they've done a really good job of just keeping it private. We don't really know a whole lot about their relationship for her being the most famous person in America and him being one of the five most popular players in the most popular league. Like, they kind of just mind their own business. Hey, we're going to go to dinner. We love each other. Hey, we're going to... They don't really bother me. They really don't. I get why people are excited about it. I mean, I'm not a Swiftie by any means, but she doesn't bother me. She seems pretty cool. She seems fine to me, so hey, I support them. If they're happy, I'm happy. So good luck to Travis. Good luck to Taylor as they are engaged to be married. Coming up on the other side, let's get a little Royals baseball in our day. Jacob Milham of Kings of Kauffman set to join the show. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I just noticed something, and I never noticed this before. So our text line is acting up, so I actually don't have access to the text line. That's why we haven't read any text. Rob, did you know that our old text line number is still up? And did you know that people text the number? Now I see why some of you get so mad. You have been texting the show, and quite literally, no one logs into that number anymore. I don't even know how I'm on the number right now. So I was on it earlier. We were using the text line. I got kicked off. It then like auto-logged me into an old login for it. And now it's the old number, the 586-7610 number. We don't use that number anymore. Now I see why sometimes you guys are so angry on the text line. Because you're just basically just talking into the ether. No one reads this. Not a single person reads this. Like, oh man, they never reply to my text. Because you ain't talking to nobody. That's why nobody replies. I just want you to know that. So if you're texting the old number, if you're texting the 7610 number, I just want to let you know that no one monitors that number. Please delete that number out your phone and text the right one correctly. The 913-586-7965. Please text that one and you'll just be a happier individual. And then there's a chance that I read your text. And then there's a chance that I respond to your text because I will have seen it. Let's go to the phone lines. Someone I always respond to is Jacob Milham. He is with Kings of Kauffman. Jacob Milham, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm just glad you've never left me on red. See, these folks out here, they're trying to make their voices heard.
No,
the interwebs are stifling it.
No, that's fair. You know what? I want to make sure that everybody gets their voice read. I really do. I want to make sure that everybody is happy. I honestly want to make that the case. So let's just start with this. It felt to me that on Tuesday night, we were looking at the possibility of baseball season being over. The Royals were down 4-0 heading into the eighth inning. You cannot afford to lose a series to the Chicago White Sox, not at this stretch in the season. And then magic happened. The Royals score 5 runs in the final 2 innings. They win that game 5-4. They still had more offense to go. They scored 12 runs yesterday. How do the Royals do this where every time you think that baseball season could be over and then we could move on, the Royals always pull some kind of magic trick at the end?
It's just like the Godfather, ain't it? Every time we think we're out, they pull us right back in. See that? That's just how it goes. And yeah, it was evaluating just the vibes on Tuesday night to Thursday night, immensely different. And, you know, it's, people say, oh, well, you can't afford to lose this series. And from the Royals perspective, I get it. In the wild card standings, you literally cannot afford to lose that series. And thankfully they didn't. They pulled it out. But then you're going up against a team this weekend in the Detroit Tigers that got swept. They got swept by the homeless Athletics. They don't even have a home stadium. So, I mean, it's, no team is perfect. This is baseball. It's 162 games. Anything can happen on any given night.
Jacob, why do you think the Royals have been so bad against teams that are 500 or better? Now, most teams struggle against those teams. Those are the good teams in the sport. So I don't want to make it seem like everybody is great against them and not the Royals. But, I mean, they've been just beyond struggling against those teams. If the Royals end up missing the postseason, it will be because of two things. It will be because the month of June, where they completely drown themselves. It will then also be because, like, they could just never win a series or get hot or have one of those stretches against teams that really matter. Why have they struggled so much?
I wish I had the answer. Like, there's no specific answer. And if I had to gander, I think it's because something that Josh Reiner has brought up several times, and it's because it's the truth. The Royals this year, especially, have not been truly elite in any one area, right? There's so many facets to the game, and yeah, the fielding is well above average. Don't get me wrong there, but you know those blunders cost a lot more. They're not elite at home runs. They have too many issues on the base pass sometimes. The starting pitching, especially down the stretch, has really waned. And now we're seeing, you know, once the bullpen got taxed, things got really dicey there for a little bit. And I think that's it. There's nothing that across the entire season the Royals can hang their hat on and say, we are a top three team in this, right? And that's not something that other teams have had to shut down, if that makes sense. I don't know what's going on with the Royals when they face teams above 500. It's so frustrating. It really is, because that's the fuel to the fire of so many people saying this is a good team. This isn't a playoff team. This is a good team. This is probably a winning record team, I would hope. But this just doesn't feel like a playoff team. And I think that record above 500 is the reason why.
Right now, we're talking to Jacob Milham. He is with Kings of Kauffman. Talking a little Royals baseball here, is the Royals, they are three games back of the Mariners. That's really the only team that kind of matters now at this point, at least in my mind, is will they have the ability to be able to catch the Mariners? I do want to kind of look ahead to that series coming up in just a bit, but let's focus in on, I guess, present day and what the Royals are doing. Vinny Pasquantino has been on fire. I was talking to Denny a couple days ago, and he described Vinny as a guy that can just drive in runs. And I made the note to Vern, that's just like in basketball when you say a guy can just go get you a bucket. I'm not really sure if there's a better compliment that you can have for a first baseman than a guy who can just drive in runs. And that's what Vinny has done for really the last calendar year.
Yeah, he absolutely has. And it is, he gets, whether it's getting himself across home plate with putting one over the left field fence, or driving in Bobby or Mike Yastrzemski in from second base, he gets those guys in and he puts a run up on the board, and that's all that really matters. He is, you know, it is insane how different this lineup has felt once he recaptured that 2024 strength, right? Like 2024 was not a perfect year for Vinny Pasquantino at all, and it is unfortunate that he lost out on the latter part of that season with that injury. But he was great in, whether it's a sacrifice fly, whether it was just hitting one to the gap or screaming one into right field, he was able to get it done. And yeah, he's been great. He has been awesome. And just like you talked about, well, what would the Royal season look without that month of June? I wonder what would Vinny's season stats look like if you started the year off in May. He had a really slow start to the year. And I remember things were bad enough that folks weren't calling for Jack Caglione to go to the outfield. They were calling for Jack Caglione to be the first baseman for the Royals. And now that just feels like an otherworldly thought. And that is all a credit to what Vinny is doing at the plate.
From a financial standpoint, how would you kind of handle Vinny Pasquantino? Are you going to do kind of the Cole Reagans, Hunter Dozier, where you just basically buy out his arbitration? Or are you interested in a more long-term solution fix for Vinny Pasquantino?
So, of course, you got to focus on buying out the arbitration, I would say. And I wouldn't put too much stock in extending into its free agent years, if that makes sense. It's that's more of a concern when you have guys that are, you know, they're making their debut when they're 22 or 23 years old, and you don't have that team control much past their athletic prime. That's not so much the case with Vinny. Like, you have him, he's in his baseball prime right now, or at least in the beginning of it. He's going to be 28 opening day 2026, and he's not a free agent until 2029. So I would say extend him out through the 2031 season. Then you get the best years of Vinny Pasquantino. And from his side, he can look at that. Okay, I have some stability here with the Kansas City Royals. And if he is still good enough at that point, once the deal expires, well, he could probably go get another lengthy contract in free agency at that point. I would love the idea of extending Vinny Pasquantino if I didn't think that Michael Garcia was a bigger extension priority in my mind. Does that make sense, Cito?
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes a lot of sense. Right now we're talking to Jacob Milham with Kings of Kauffman, just getting his thoughts on where we are right now with the Kansas City Royals. They have added a couple of new players since the last time that you and I got a chance to speak. I guess let's start with this. I give the Royals a lot of credit for not giving up. I think a lot of people were telling the Royals in early August, late July, to kind of just give up. You know what I mean? Like, hey, the trade deadline is coming up. Trade Seth Lugo. Start to get ready for 2026. That is obviously not what the Royals have done. They kind of retooled the bottom half of that lineup on the fly, and I think it's paid major dividends.
It has. It absolutely has. And that is, you know, Mike Yastrzemski has been head and shoulders above what I think anyone expected him to be, right? Like, I expected him to be the left-handed side of the platoon with Randall Grichuk. I thought that was what he was going to be, and he has just been an excellent leadoff bat for this Royals lineup, and I think the ripple effects have been immense, right? No offense to Jonathan India, but Mike Yastrzemski has just been a much better batter in that leadoff spot, and that has pushed Jonathan India down to the back half of the lineup. But he's doing great in that role. And sometimes we talk about guys just needing a change of scenery. Well, it doesn't always mean changing teams, right? Like, that batting sixth or seventh just later on changes how you approach the plate appearance. And Jonathan India has looked much more like the guy that Royals fans hoped he would be from the get when the team traded for him this offseason. And we saw another guy last night that the Royals got at the trade deadline that has really helped this team stay in it, and Ryan Berger. And we give a lot of credit to Noah Cameron and Noah Cameron's success as a rookie, and he deserves it. Ryan Berger is right there with him for an elite rookie starting pitching, and just the production has been amazing. It was great in San Diego, but how he has changed things and just kept the momentum going in Kansas City in a bigger role. I don't know, this past trade deadline, it couldn't have gotten much better for the Royals, and that has really kept them in the playoff race, even though they're three games back from the Mariners.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Burgert. I mean, that was kind of one of those pieces that I know it was kind of difficult in the short term to give up Freddie Fermin, a guy that we all liked. But I think you like Burgert, obviously, for the short term. He's been a positive for this team. Also, looking at the long term, like, what it does more than anything is it just gives the Royals options. It gives them various options of what they can do this offseason. If they're going to keep a pitcher, if they're going to trade a pitcher, use it as collateral to try to get something more in a trade. That's what I think Burgert really kind of gives them. He just gives them a lot of roster flexibility.
Yes, he absolutely does. And it is, you know, we don't think about Dayton Moore very much in Kansas City Royals baseball anymore, I imagine. But he was right when he says pitching is the currency of baseball. And Ryan Berger is, you know, in this world where starting pitching is at a premium in free agency right now, even relief pitchers who have a chance of becoming a starting pitcher are getting very good money on the open market. It's really made such a good, controllable, team-friendly player that much more valuable. And Ryan Berger, and I don't think he's just scratching the surface, if that makes sense. I think he could still get much, much better. but I think he could do it for a long time if the Kansas City Royals will have him.
Right now, we're talking to Jacob Milham for a few more minutes here, just getting his thoughts on the Kansas City Royals as they are about to head into a series against the Detroit Tigers. What are your expectations for this Tigers series? We touched on it just a bit. I don't think it's realistic to pick the Royals to win the series. I would love to pick them to win the series, but just history tells you that they are probably not going to win this series. I want to be hopeful. I want to be optimistic. Give me the path for the Royals taking care of business this weekend against Detroit.
I mean, I think the path between them winning the series and losing it ultimately runs through Saturday. That is still, you know, Noah Cameron, he's getting towards that work, that scary workload point, and the Royals don't have him listed as the starting pitcher on Saturday. So I think that's going to be a big thing. Seth Lugo taking the mound on Friday night. We're going to need some 2024 Seth Lugo. If they want to win that game and ultimately the series, we can't have the Seth Lugo that we've been seeing across the past month. You know, that the start against the Rangers was really hopeful and really reminiscent of what he can do, but he just hasn't done that consistently over the past couple of weeks. So it's been frustrating. If you look at these two teams are so close on paper, CDOT. I'm not even kidding. If you go and look up how the batters have been doing, how the pitching has been doing since the All-Star break, these two teams are very, very close. This game might just come down to star power, genuinely, because we have seen so many games from the Detroit Tigers where Riley Green just takes over and powers them to a win. He's the guy that can go get you that bucket and that win. Or Spencer Torkelson, the former highly regarded prospect. He is finding a new groove this season. He is the guy that can go out and get you that win. Now, can Bobby Wood Jr. do the same thing? Can Salvador Perez go out and have just an elite game? Can Vinny Pasquantino have another huge game at the plate? I think that this is going to be decided in the margins, and just the star power, whoever shines brightest, can push you into that winning spot. I expect this to be a very competitive series. If I had to bet it, unfortunately, I wouldn't bet that the Royals would win the overall series. I'm with you, C-Dot. It's the Detroit Tigers are where they are this late in the season for a good reason. They are a very good ball club. But like I said earlier, anything can happen. A very good ball club lost the Athletics 3 games in a row. So we'll just have to see what happens and tune in and find out.
Jacob, last thing here. The only thing that I want, and this is the one thing I'm asking for, I want the Royals to be within striking distance of Seattle in a couple of weeks. I just want to see what Kauffman Stadium's going to be like. I want to see what Kauffman's going to be like when the Royals are 2.5 games back of the team that's directly ahead of them, and these games matter. They're not going to be playoff games, but they're going to feel like playoff games in terms of importance and what it means for you actually making the postseason. That's all I want. I don't care how they get there, but I really want that Mariners series to mean something.
I think it will. I really, really think it will. If I can go on a tangent real quick.
Of course.
Jack Johnson, really, really great guy. He knows his stuff when he talks about Royals baseball. Last year, I remember he tweeted out a really long video of pops from Kauffman Stadium playoff history over the 2014-2015 run. And we know that Kansas City can be a baseball town. We saw it then. We saw the parade. We saw the sea of blue. We can see it. And I think that this team can take it to that Mariners series and keep it within striking distance. I really can. I will, if Royals fans need any hope out there, they ain't going to find it in the numbers. I'll tell you that much, C-Dot. Fangraphs has them at a 14% chance of making the playoffs. It doesn't look good. But man, if they take advantage of a favorable schedule through to that Mariners series, they could take advantage of that. Then, well, I think those games will have a big impact on their overall odds. Now, are the Royals going to be healthy? Are the Mariners going to be healthy? Is that going to be another series decided by star power? I don't know. But the Royals do just, they need to take care of business one game at a time. And it all starts with the Detroit Tigers.
That is Jacob Milham joining us on the show today. He's with Kings of Kauffman covering the Royals. Jacob, great stuff, man. We appreciate your time as always.
Thank you, C-Dot. I'll chat with you later.
Absolutely. That is Jacob Milham of Kings of Kauffman joining us on the show today. Always great to catch up with him and talk a little bit of Royals baseball. Rob, are you optimistic? Are you hopeful kind of heading into this series against the Detroit Tigers? How are you feeling heading into this?
I don't know if optimistic is the right word, because I just saw a series where the Royals and Tigers matched up and the Tigers won the series. But I'm not defeated. I'm not walking into this series with a defeated mentality. Because if we look back at that series last weekend when the Royals were in Detroit, and I know road versus home in baseball means very little in the regular season compared to other sports, but it does matter. They were in that game all the way to the end on Friday night. They were in the game all the way to the end on Saturday night. And then it was a back and forth topsy-turvy. They won the game on Sunday. If you're telling me that same team is coming to town after getting swept by the don't have a home A's, there is reason to believe you can flip one of those games and take two or three at home. I wouldn't bet it, because now you have to face Tarek Skubal this time, and Tarek Skubal might be the best pitcher in baseball, like not just AL, but pitcher, period. It's either he or Skeens. But I'm not walking into that series thinking to myself, oh, the Royals have no chance. I know the stats, I know all the numbers, but I just saw them play three games, 5 days ago? And it was back and forth. One play was the difference, one pitch the difference here and there. If the Royals can get that one pitch to go their way, may they take two or three from the Tigers. And now it's Monday, it's Labor Day. We're getting ready for an Angels series, and maybe you're 1-2 back of the Mariners. And now the race is really on as you enter September.
Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to head to Columbia to get you ready for the first Missouri game of the season. They got a game against Central Arkansas. They're still trying to figure out the quarterback position for the Missouri Tigers. Keep it right here. You're listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, it's Cole Reagans from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with C-Dot on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into the show. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get you ready for Missouri's first game of the season. They are taking on Central Arkansas, but the story is they don't know who their quarterback is. We'll talk to Brandon Kiley about that coming up momentarily. Before we do that, let me give you guys a little bit of gambling updates. I know that some of you like to put a little money down on these games, and that's why I'm here to help you simply by giving you the information. I'm not here to offer up any suggestions. You got to come up with those suggestions on your own. I'm simply here to offer you information this season. The five most popular overs in college football this year: Nebraska over 7.5, Colorado over 5.5, LSU over 8.5, Missouri over 7.5, Illinois over 7.5 as well. I love the Illinois over at 7.5. I think the Illinois has got a chance of making the college football playoff this season. So that is a bet that I myself will be participating in. Let me get you ready for this weekend in college football and tell you the five most popular college football player props. They're all anytime touchdowns, because of course you want to bet on a guy to win a touchdown. Jeremiah Smith, he is the most bet player to score a touchdown in week one, the very talented wide receiver out of Ohio State. There's only been one other player that I thought could have played in the NFL after their freshman year. It was Adrian Peterson. If you guys remember Adrian Peterson's freshman season at Oklahoma, I'd never seen anything like it before. I didn't think it was possible to dominate college football as a true freshman the way that he was. And then we saw Jeremiah Smith last season, and he was by far and away the best player in college football last year. If like just talking like specialized, like I thought he was phenomenal last year. So Jeremiah Smith, he's the most bet player to score a touchdown on Saturday. Jeremiah Love, who's the best running back in college football, he's number two. Ryan Williams, he was one of the best wide receivers in college football last year. Cade Klubnik, he is the quarterback at Clemson. He is minus 115 to score a touchdown. And Arch Manning, he is plus 175 to score an anytime touchdown. I actually really like the Arch Manning touchdown. You're going to give me plus money. It just feels like a little RPO at the goal line, little QB keeper. He uses his athleticism to score a touchdown in his first real start as a quarterback of the Texas Longhorns. Go ahead and give me an Arch Manning at plus 175. I'm assuming you can get a boost on this. So, yeah, go ahead and give me a little Arch Manning with a little boost for the kickoff of the college football season. I really like that bet.
You know, all those bets tell me people are betting on known commodities early in the season. Like, Arch Manning, I guess, isn't a known commodity, but it's Arch Manning. We know him without knowing him. Jeremiah Love was in the national championship game last year for Notre Dame. He had that incredible run in the semifinal against Penn State. People know who Jeremiah Love is. Jeremiah Smith, don't even talk about it. Ryan Williams. If Jeremiah Smith didn't exist, we'd be talking about Ryan Williams as the best player in college football. And Cade Klubnik is, what, the second biggest betting favorite to win the Heisman behind Arch? Like, it's week one. It's these, you don't bet on things where you don't really know it. You're not walking into a game and be like, you know what? This is the week to take a dark horse, take a flyer. You don't know what you don't know. Take the names you know, because those are the five best players in the sport this year.
Yeah, for sure. No, you definitely got to go what you know. This isn't the time for player discovery. Team discovery, sure. But when it comes to players, I'll wait until later in the season before I start taking some chances on some other guys to score touchdowns. I want to play this audio for you for the very simple reason I have a new favorite athlete. One of the things I hate about athletes and athlete interviews and press conferences is they never say anything. And you guys always let them off the hook. Well, I mean, what else do you expect them to say? How they actually think and how they feel. Like, you're allowed to say that. I want to play for you the audio of a tennis player that I had absolutely no clue existed before yesterday. I don't even know the person who she got into the beef with. All I know is at the U.S. Open, I saw two tennis players. They looked like they were having a very spirited conversation. They looked like they were arguing about something. And then I heard the one tennis player tell the other tennis player, God bless, and then bowed to her and walked off. Now, I couldn't hear the whole conversation, but I think I know women enough. If she tells you God bless, bows, and walks off, she feels like she won the argument. Well, of course, at the press conference, she sits down, and now, hey, what happened? Listen to this. Oh, my goodness.
I can't speak on what her intentions were. I can only speak on how I handled the situation. And how I handled it is someone who's upset about the outcome that occurred. You lost, and you're upset about that. Saying I have no education and no class, I don't really take that personally because I know that it's so far from the truth and so far from anything. And again, if I allow what other people have to say about me affect me in that way, then they win. So ultimately, no. I stood up for myself and I kept in my mind in that moment how I wanted to portray myself and how I wanted to show up. And if my son were to see this interaction, how would he view it? And I think he would be proud of the way that I handled the situation. I'm very strong. I'm very proud as a Black woman being out here representing myself and representing us and our culture. And I make sure that I do everything that I can to be the best representation possible every time that I step on the court and even off the court.
She was talking even spicier than this, Rob. You didn't put all the sauce in there. She told that girl, you mad because I packed you up. I was like, oh, goodness. We need more of this. She cut a WWE promo. That's what I heard. I was like, oh, my goodness. I can't believe you're talking to the opponent like this. Why can't we get this more in sports that I actually watch? She was like, she mad because I moved on and I'm still getting paid and she's not. She's going home. I was like, oh, goodness. Taylor Townsend. I don't know nothing about her. I'm cheering for her. I don't even know if she's that good. I mean, she got to be good. She's in the U.S. Open, and she just beat somebody. She said, I let my racket do the talk. That's what I like. We need more of that in sports. We need more, I don't like this other person. They were trying to do that in the WNBA, and then y'all got mad. I don't know what was happening. Like, oh, I don't really like her. Like, oh, why, be nice to her. Like, oh, I kind of like it when they're not nice to each other. Sports are actually more entertaining when they're not nice to each other. I like it when they're mean to each other. Pick on the other individual. Good. I love the arguing about it. Let my racket do the talking. Rob, when's the last time you got packed up in something? Has that happened soon? I mean, that's going to happen next Saturday, but I didn't know if there was a time before this where you felt like you got your team got packed up.
I mean, in civil tournament, does that count? That was you knew the feeling. You all,
no, team, no, no, Steve, why you got to do that? I don't know the feeling. I don't know the feeling.
We were brothers in arms that night. You had about 90 minutes of, well, that was fun to watch Kansas lose. And then it was commiserating. It was misery loves company. That's probably the last time.
No, Missouri definitely got packed up. I'm here to tell you, Bennett Sturts and Ben McCollum absolutely packed Missouri up that day. No, they did for sure. I was a little disappointed by it. Very disappointed. Do you have Nebraska winning today?
I do.
Do you hate Nebraska? Like, I don't know how Kansas fans in 2025 feel about Nebraska. Like, I don't really feel one way or the other. I mean, I don't really like Nebraska, but that's just because they used to terrorize Missouri for 40 years. But I mean, I don't got nothing against Nebraska. I'm not actively rooting against them today. How do you feel about the Cornhuskers?
There was definitely a time in my life when I hated Nebraska.
Yeah, for sure. That time's just over. They're so out of sight, out of mind. I don't feel any negativity towards them anymore.
Like, I won't lie though, when they went to Dublin a couple years ago and lost to Northwestern, it did bring a smile to my face.
I mean, I'm not going to be mad if they lose. I mean, I want to at least be there. Like, if they win, I'm not going to be hating on it. But if they lose, I will definitely join you in kicking Nebraska's back in tomorrow on the show. Absolutely. I always reserve that right. I always reserve the right to make fun of your favorite team when they lose. That's I always check the terms and conditions on that box every single time.
Yeah, I don't think I hate Nebraska, and I have a bet out on them to win tonight. I think they're going to cover the 6.5, and there's a couple boosts on FanDuel if you want to play them tonight. So like there's money to be made, and I think they're going to have a home game tonight. So I'm kind of
I don't think they're going to have a home game. I know they're having a home game.
I know they have a home game tonight.
I actually don't know this. I've never been to a Nebraska home game. I've only seen them play Missouri in Columbia. What's the Nebraska, what's their, like how you guys like wave the wheat, for example?
Their version of rock chalk or like the OH is they scream go big red.
I know that, but like do they have anything else? Like Missouri, they, you know, blow off the cannon when they score a touchdown and they have the drum and then the, you know, the servicemen do push-ups whenever they score a touchdown. Like what's Nebraska's thing?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the answer. I wish the text line worked. The text line would tell us, but the text line can't tell me.
I actually went to a Nebraska game once. Does holding your shoe up at kickoff count? Because they do that.
Absolutely counts.
They do that.
Hold on.
They do that. That's what they do.
They take their shoe off and
their foot,
hold
it up at kickoff.
What does that mean?
I just saw it happen. I was at a Nebraska game. I saw it happening, and I was like,
did you take your shoe off?
I'm not a Nebraska fan, so I did not.
Okay.
My shoe stayed on my feet that day.
I didn't know.
I was also in bleachers.
I'm going to tell you one thing, though. I bet that Nebraska highlight pump-up video, I bet it's real good. Kind of like you guys got a good video at Lawrence. I bet their video is good. Now, you guys have, like, current memories to tell you how good you are. Their memories, they just stop at some point, but I bet they got a real exciting pump up video.
It's all the way until that Nebraska 0-1 national title game, and then no more pump
up. That's kind of the end of it. No, that honestly is the end of excitement for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by Brandon Kiley. Let's talk about Mizzou. They don't know who their quarterback is. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.